Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Indie Film Cafe's Forgotten Horror Classics. I'm your co-host, the Moo Cow, and joined by...
Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hello. And
together, we are both joined for the first time with...
Jonathan Moody.
Yay. Welcome to your first time on the show.
Yes. You've been doing this for, what, 2 years now?
Something like that. Yeah. And this time, we are talking about the 2012... movie from Ben Wheatley called Kill List. And Ben Wheatley is an English director who has done a number of different interesting films. Just about everything I've seen from him has been really good. And really, any one of them, you know, whether it's
A Field in England
or In the Earth or some of the other movies that he's done, any one of these could be on the Forgotten Horror Classics, just because... They just, you know, unless you're on IFC, which does a lot of the financing for these things, you don't really see them. And he's not really talked about a lot, although apparently he did just start getting into some more mainstream Hollywood kind of movies, because I thought he did the Meg 2, but I'm not sure. We were actually supposed to do another film, and I unfortunately that movie was corrupted on the thumb drive, so at the last second I had to come up with this film, which is fine because it was on my list anyway. It's just I wasn't prepared to talk about it.
It was on your list?
It was on my kill list.
Yeah. I mentioned that earlier, Dan. It was on his list. And
I had seen it before.
I'm not on your list, am I?
No. I've seen three of his movies so far, and they've all been really good and not traditional, if you know what I mean. And one of the reasons I like this particular film, and then he even talks about it a little bit, is the way that he sets up the narrative. You kind of expect it to be a certain way, and then it turns into something else, and then it turns into something else. And then by the end, it's like, where the hell have we wobbled off to? This is this is really weird and unexpected. And, so what did you guys think? This is your first time seeing it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You too?
Yep, my first time. I never heard of it.
All right. So what did you guys think?
Well, I think there were a lot of things that I thought were going to be answered that were never answered.
No, there's a lot of ambiguity in this.
Yeah. Which I don't necessarily dislike, but it set it up, like, they would mention things so many times, you're like, okay, at some point they're going to reveal what this is. Nope. You're just left wondering, oh my gosh, what happened there?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and just like in life, it would be nice to be able to know everything at all times, but we don't have that, so.
Yeah.
Just like life, yeah.
Pretty right. much. Yep. What about you, Jonathan?
Just like Joe, I'd never seen it, never heard of it, and honestly, it was just like, is this, you know, it started off a little slow for my taste, you know, and everything. You know me, I'm very much a, I've got ADHD, so when things are a little slow happening, and I'm just like, what is going on here? I kind of check out, you know, after a little bit, and if I'm not watching it, like, for a review or something... Generally, if I were watching it by myself, I probably would have turned this off, just because I would just be like, not really that interested. But we've had movies like that before that we've reviewed that I've watched that I had to watch a second time with you in order to watch, like, The Lobster.
Mm-hmm.
Lobster is a good example of a movie that starts off kind of slow, kind of too weird, that I'm just like, I don't know what's going on here, and I don't like it. And I kind of check out, and if I watch it by myself, I'm just like, I don't know, I'm done. And then when I watch it with you, it's a little like you're kind of, it's almost like you've got like a little safety seat, you know, kind of thing where you're stuck, you know, you can't really leave, and you watch it and it gets better later, you know.
I think so much of that beginning was just trying to establish the characters as
Right.
human beings that we actually care about, and then they go off and do this horrific shit, you know, and but you're already invested in them, you know, you already care about them as people, and then they start doing this horrible stuff and you're like, right. Oh my God.
From a narrative's perspective, the more, I mean, it kind of starts off pretty vague, and then as the more it goes on, some questions get answered, but then other questions start popping up, and then you're looking for answers for those, and you might get a few answers, but not all of them, and then more questions start popping up, and it's mm-hmm. movie that makes you think, whether you want to think about it or not, you know?
So, well, it's layered.
It's layered.
Yeah.
So I guess I could talk a little bit about what happened. So initially, this movie starts off sort of like a domestic drama. And that's kind of way you're set up to think it is. You've got these this nice British couple. I guess one, the Michelle is really from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really matter. But,
well, interesting, because she's from Sweden, the dude's British, and then the friend is Irish.
Is Irish,
so
right.
So there's all these different sort of backgrounds.
And they've got a kid together, and right from the start, there's problems in paradise because there's financial issues going on. They have definitely some kind of issue personally going back and forth. things are not good, and you come to find out it's been 8 months since he's worked.
Mm-hmm.
He's got issues going on, and she's kind of had it at this
mm-hmm.
point. She's like, you need to get out and, you know, earn some money or get back to doing what it is you're doing, and we don't know exactly what that is quite yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? So she's pestering him. He's resisting. He seems to have issues with what's going on. Meanwhile, they have a little dinner party, and that's when his friend Gal comes over with his new chicky poo that he met at Boxer size,
right.
I was laughing because you hate, like, what's the aerobics, like the...
Jazzercise.
yeah, stuff like that.
Ridiculous.
And you think it's ridiculous and stuff, but it's so fun to watch those kind of things. So.
Right.
I'd love to see what a boxer size thing is.
So now there's four of them, and they're having a dinner party, and even that doesn't go well.
No.
Abracadabra.
They end up having a fight, a very public fight.
Came out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
And when they fight, man, do they fight. But at the same time, when they make up, it's clear that they're really, really, really into each other and really, really well matched. It's just...
the stress of the situation.
Right,
yeah, they can't
right.
handle it.
They mm-hmm. can't. And it's like the one thing that's holding them and everybody together is this poor little kid.
Yeah.
You know, the nice little... what was his name? It wasn't Arthur. It was
Sammy.
Sammy.
Yeah.
Seven-year-old
kid.
He
wanted to name everything Arthur because
yeah,
he was obsessed with King Arthur stuff.
And but there's hints. It's like, you know, he's like, yeah, we've got this other job. Come on, you need to get back on the wagon. He's resisting it. He doesn't really want to do it. But, you know, in the meantime, Fiona is in the background. She's like, yeah, you know, I'm an HR person. And my thing is to
deforce.
Places and to
underperforming departments,
yeah, stuff like that.
So he's like, you sack people.
Yeah. She's like, it's not personal. Well, it's probably pretty personal to them.
Yeah,
but eventually, you know, they get past it. They again, there's more drunken shenanigans, but clearly, Gal is there to recruit him to get back into this job.
Right.
And then you find out that they were in the army together, and there are weapons in the guy's garage, and the job is going to be going off and killing people.
Well, I love that the gun that they pointed out was like bought by the wife.
Right.
Well, she's ex-military too.
Yeah.
She's ex-military. She knows what's going on.
She's clearly maybe not involved, but she knows.
She's not an innocent.
Yeah, she knows what's going on.
She allows it.
And
she allows it because it's work for him, you know, it's what he's able to do.
And it's funny because at the beginning of the movie, I don't really have a lot of sympathy for the guy at first because I'm just like, what a lazy piece of crap. You know, he hasn't worked in 8 months and he expects his wife to, he treats his wife like crap. And she's like, get out and get a job. And I'm like, yeah, man, go to work. And then I find out what his work is and I'm like, oh, no, don't go through those doors.
And it's brought up on multiple occasions that the reason he hasn't worked in 8 months is because the previous job in Kiev did not go particularly well. And we're never really given any more information on it, but it's hinted enough that something bad happened. And it's been haunting him, and he's got some PTSD
over
it.
Sure.
And it's the reason why he hasn't work, but it's also the reason why he ends up unraveling as the new job goes along.
And pretty much.
Probably also the other reason, to the reason why the theory I have as to what's going on, but I didn't want to get quite to that yet. So anyway, he and his buddy Gal, who also have a nice little rapport between each other, they're obviously old friends who've been served together and done different things and are now mercenaries for hire. So they go off and they start doing their job, and you start off with the priest. So there's a nice easy one that they do.
Oh man, the priest that likes to burst into song randomly, you know, or whatever at the restaurant. Remember he started.
Oh, that was a different guy.
That was not that priest.
That wasn't the same guy.
I thought that was the same guy.
That was just a group of randos at the restaurant.
Oh, because I literally thought they were following them.
No, they were literally just there for our main character to get to show himself being an asshole. That's really all they were there for.
Or just, you know, he's a little unhinged. Yeah. A little unhinged. But first guy they kill is the priest. But the thing is, you know, right before they kill him, it's very odd. He turns around and he says, "Thank you." Instead of, like, trying to get away or "Don't kill me."
Yeah.
Or, so that's the first bit in your, you know, first clue that something is not quite right. You know, so they kill the guy and they get rid of his body. And then the next thing they have to move on to is the librarian.
Yay.
Who just looks like a regular schmuck. But they're watching him, and he comes out of this like warehouse. And I guess Jay has a bad feeling about it because he's like, we better go check the lockup first before we shoot this guy. So reluctantly, they both go in there, and then it turns out he's a librarian, all right, because he is a facilitator for some kind of horrible child porn, and you can hear, like, kids screaming on tape. You don't get to see it, but you see their reaction to it.
I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's clearly some, like, murder, torture porn, snuff film type stuff. Going on.
That all he has to do is look at it, and that's all it takes to send him, because he's a father, and he's got a 7-year-old kid of his own, off the deep end. So they go to kill the librarian, but they really kill the librarian. That's when it starts to get really brutal.
Uh-huh.
And I forgot to mention, just before the kill list kicked off, they met the client, and the client was this creepy looking guy, and before he even knew it, he like slashes his hand open, and they do some kind of a blood oath thing. Again, generally not the sort of thing that happens, so you know it's a clue that something weird's going
on.
And they didn't, like, I mean, he almost just thought, like, whatever, you know? Like, he didn't think, like, oh, my God, that was weird, you know?
And
like,
that cut in his hand stays throughout the whole film. And, it, you know, he starts picking at it later and it gets infected and it's just gross.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that, I'm sure, in a bit.
Because it's like the physical manifestation of his contract.
So librarian that he murdered really brutally.
Oh, with a hammer.
He was saying thank you.
Right.
As well.
I'm so glad I got to meet you.
I got to meet you.
Wow.
So more weirdness going on. And you're like, wait, what?
That's, yeah.
And he doesn't know. He doesn't understand. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Because when the priest said thank you, he pretty much said thank you for letting him to turn around to get shot back in the head. And, you know, like...
Maybe it was puzzling.
Yeah, I think he was thanking him for being involved in something
that's
bigger.
Literally what I thought. I thought, because he said turn around.
Mm-hmm.
He said turn around, so the guy said thank you. So my first bit, I wasn't even thinking, because I didn't know, you know, we didn't know that the other guys were going to say thank you and everything. I just thought he was saying, you know, he didn't want to, he wanted it to be like a quick look.
There's a reason for all that as it comes out later on, but you don't know that. So
Right, because I kind of thought that too, but the thing that was weird about the priest is that he was smiling when he first turned around and saw the assassin, you know, he's smiling and like, what? So,
and that was where I got all fucked up, because in my head, it was that guy from the thing. So I thought he was smiling because, okay, now the guy that I saw earlier is the one that's going to be killing me.
Oh, no.
You know,
no,
but no,
no.
So, but no, they're not different.
Related.
They're not.
So this is not a typical hit. You know, clearly these guys who are getting hit know more about what's going on.
Right.
As does the client than the hitmen do. And they're not privy to it. In fact, he calls them just cogs.
He said, "Keep turning.
Keep turning.
Keep turning."
Yeah, because they're just doing what they're supposed to do, and that's it. They don't know. They have no other information about it.
And they're not supposed to know.
So, but he's, you know, he's ticked off at the librarian, and man, that was a brutal. I mean, he mashes him with the hammer. You could, the breaking the legs, smashing his hands.
Yeah.
Smashing his skull.
Yeah, it was bad.
And then they find out, okay, here's where the guy keeps his money, and here's the address of the guy that makes the movies, so they go off list. Because, yeah, Jay's had enough, and he's not dealing with this rashly anymore, and Gal's trying to hold him in. He's like, try to be professional. You just stay on the list. He's like, no. And they find out where the guy is, and he starts killing everybody. You know,
including the dog.
Including the dog.
Yeah. What did that dog ever do?
Poor dog.
Maybe he saw him in the video doing something bad.
Could be. Probably just a watchdog.
Eating one of the
Probably just a guard dog. Probably guardy, like, you know.
It's funny. He's like, yeah, come get me after 20 minutes. And then after 20 minutes, he's like, has it been 20 minutes already? And meanwhile, he's been smashing the one guy into the wall
until
he's a bloody mess. But he's still not dead. He's just like in this horrible, mangled state. Hole.
And when he says bloody mess, he means real blood, not like bloody, like the British term bloody.
And then he kills him. And now he's like, Gal's like, okay, dude, you're wigging out. I don't want to have anything to do with this. And they start debating about whether they should continue on with the contract. They dig up the client who's like, yeah, you're doing this contract or you're going to die. Your family's going to die.
But before then, too, like right before then, he has to go to the hospital because his hand is infected. And he goes and meets a doctor who's like, he kept saying, can you work on my hand? And the guy's like, oh no, we need to, talk about your mental state and all these other things. And he's like, I'm like, dude, what is going on?
So I don't get gangrene.
I know.
Do your job.
Right.
It's like, it had nothing to do with the...
And as it turns out, the doctor is also involved.
And he knew about the stuff that happened to him. He needed more information. So we were all like, the whole time going, what the fuck is going on?
How do these people all know?
Finally, they get to number 3 on the hit list, or on the kill list. And
the last guy, I think.
The MP. And already, it's different because this guy's going to be rich. He's powerful. He's got a lot of friends. And he has this estate. So they sneak onto the estate. And it's just this one big, huge manor house. And they're camping overnight and waiting for their opportunity. When all of a sudden, weird shit starts to happen. They start hearing a drum and they hear
whistling.
A whistle. And then they look up and there's this line of torches, really super creepy. People in masks, half
like
of them are
straw
naked.
Masks. Yeah.
I thought it was like looked like twigs and stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a mix of like the Wicker Man and Bell Witch or Blair Witch.
Blair Witch.
Yeah, a little bit.
And all of a sudden shit's getting weird. And they have somebody that they're sacrificing, and they hang this woman who, again, has no real problem with it.
No, she's totally...
She's like waving.
She's waving at her. Yeah, and she's just like all the other hit list victims. Like, thank you,
Right.
She's totally a willing participant
in this. So there's some kind of weird, creepy cult that you have to die in order to probably go on to the next level or something. That's what they believe.
So you're saying that the hitman guys, both of them, Gal and what was the main guy's name?
Jay.
Jay.
Yeah.
And Gal and Jay were going around killing people who are happy to die for this cause of whatever their cult. And that's why they're thanking them.
And the next level down is they've been manipulated the whole time by this group. That's why they were marked, because Fiona knew was with that group all along. You find that out at the end. And so he's been marked because they need whatever sacrifice thing to happen. The thing is, does the wife know? That's the biggest question. Because after that whole thing with the creepy cult thing, they all start attacking him, and he's, they're trying to shoot their way out, and poor Gal gets himself gutted, and he can't make it out, so Jay has to shoot him in the head. Meanwhile, Shell and his son have gone off to the cottage to hide because they already know that they've been compromised when they went back to try and talk their way out of the contract.
Right.
And he goes back to them at the cottage, and they've been followed, and all their tires have been slashed, and there's people around them, and all of a sudden these torches are
all
nowhere.
All the torches.
Yeah, and he's like, get away from the windows, arm yourself. If it's not me, shoot them. And they all start coming after him, and he gets knocked out. She kills a few of them, but then she gets knocked out. And then he wakes up, and now he's part of this weird sacrifice
Yeah, he's got that little mask on.
Yeah, right. They put one of the twig masks on him.
Right.
Yeah, and then they put a, you know, then the, he has fight. To fight another person.
The hunchback.
The hunchback. Right. Yeah, they have to fight the hunchback.
And the hunchback is masked and has a coat on, and you can't really tell what's going on, but it's wandering around, waving a knife around, and, you know, I guess in his mental state, maybe they even drugged him too. He doesn't quite get what's going on, but he ends up having the knife fight, and he kills it. And then everybody's applause, just like at the
just
hanging.
Just like at the hanging, right.
And then he reveals that, you know, the hunchback was actually his wife with the son tied to her back.
Yeah.
And he murdered both of them.
Yeah, because he was, like, stabbing the hunchback right in the hump, right? Which was actually his son.
Horrible enough as it was. Yeah. And you were like, oh, because you didn't expect that.
No, I did not.
But then, even more, it's like at the very last thing that poor Shell does is like she kind of laughs.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, was she in it on it too? Oh, my God.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just, it was just a weird thing.
It's ambiguous.
I think she was laughing just because she's like, I can't believe that this is how it ends. And how fucked up life is. This is ridiculous.
I don't know. I wonder if it's another level, you know? That whatever this cult was, whatever this creepy shit is, you know, that they manipulated all these people, they could be manipulating other people too.
It's possible, because Fiona was going over and hanging out with her all the time.
And
so maybe
she would show up and wave, and they were getting, somebody was taking pictures of them while
this
they
is
were
why
that was Fiona too,
yeah.
At times I was like, is this real or is this just like in the dude's head too some of the times? Because I'm like, so that means that Fiona followed them to the hotel that they're staying at.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looked like Fiona out there when
she was
like,
the one definitely out there waving.
Right,
out there
waving at there. And then went and went back to the girl's house later. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, is he just dreaming that she's there?
And that's real.
That's why I love movies like this and things like The Shining, where you're not really sure what it is. You can't trust your senses anymore. It's like, are we in a dream? Are we in a nightmare? What is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the more you try to find something to grasp onto, the slipperier it becomes.
Mm.
You know, and that's a very, very difficult thing to pull off, and to pull off well, which I think Ben Wheatley does really, really well here. I can't think of too many other movies that have done this much ambiguity and have it work in you know, the way that it did. You know, not just the sort of the regular sort of hitman kind of story, because I mean, really, when you think about it, you think of Quentin Tarantino with Reservoir Dogs as one way of sort of taking a new twist on the old hitman thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is kind of like that, only in a much different direction.
It wasn't a hitman, because robbers, right?
Yeah.
So that, you know, they weren't supposed to go and do any kind of hits or even kill anybody. They were just there to rob a bank, and then it just went, or was it a jewelry store or something like that? And it just,
or maybe not Reservoir Dogs, maybe it was the other one.
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, the hitman.
So like, yeah, Pulp Fiction had a little bit like, and I like that, like, you know, and I almost felt like very Tarantino-ish, because, like, just their conversations when they weren't doing the hits was just normal shit, you know, about their life and about the stuff that was going on. And it just felt like two normal hitmen going together, hanging out together and stuff.
Drunk, getting into fights, doing weird shit.
Yeah.
Only it was a very British way of sort of doing it.
More like Guy Ritchie, I guess.
Yeah, like you mentioned, it was like a Guy Ritchie mashup.
Yeah, which I love Guy Ritchie stuff, but it's like he's never done a horror movie, so this would be like the closest to seeing what a Guy Ritchie horror movie would be like, you know, and everything. Except, this, honestly, and Guy Ritchie is a bit more straightforward than Ben Wheatley seems to be.
Oh, yeah.
At least in this film I haven't seen. I'm pretty sure he's straightforward in Meg 2. That's what he directed. The Trench.
Yeah.
The Trench.
Yeah.
I have not seen it.
I don't think you're missing out.
No, I'm sorry, Ben. I think Ben is better off doing his kind of movies.
He should direct stuff he writes, you know, like, or whatever that he wants to do. I don't know if he wrote Meg 2. I don't think he did.
No, I don't think so.
I bet he was just a hired hand to direct it. But I'm sure the direction is great, but, like, you know, to me, I don't think that movie needs a good director on it.
Well, and as he mentioned in the little thing that we watched, he generally works with his wife, Amy Jump. She's the writer. He co-writes, and then the two of them have worked together and done editing together, and they've done this together for quite a long time. So when they are doing one of their movies, it's going to be all about their style and everything. And so it's going to be different when you're hired on to do somebody else's right. project. You know, yeah. you can't bring that with you generally. You generally have to do what it is that they want you to
well,
do.
Well, if this movie taught us anything, it's sometimes you got to do unsavory things to pay the bills.
There you go. Yeah. So, but all of that kind of ambiguity and just do the sort of playing with the darkness and playing with shadows and upsetting people's expectations is probably not what you want to bring to a movie like Meg 2, because it's just a stupid shark movie. Just give them a stupid shark movie. That's all it's going to be.
Yeah, that's all America, like, you know, yeah. for those kind of movies want. I do like you were saying earlier, Joe, that, like, you know, Jay was a lazy bastard in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and we thought why go to work, go do something, you know.
Yeah, yeah, what a loser.
And even his son was basically saying, oh, everybody calls you a loser, Dad.
Yeah, but clearly his son doesn't know what he does.
No,
but
right.
no.
but yeah, I mean, and I'm feeling bad for the woman, like, oh, she married this lazy bastard. And then when I find out why he doesn't want to go back to work, I'm like, oh yeah, I wouldn't want to go back to work either.
No,
holy crap.
No.
Yeah.
As far as the way the movie is shot and how it looks, I love the way he does it. There's some really, really great shots in the film.
That rainbow shot.
The rainbow shot was good. That whole part when it unravels during the MP scene where they're in the tunnels. Good
oh,
Lord, that
yeah.
was claustrophobic. That
oh,
was
yeah.
so well done.
Yeah.
It was scary.
That must
the
have been
first
hard.
Time I saw that, I was like, holy shit. I felt like I was really there.
I mean, yeah.
It must have been so hard to shoot that.
And he was shooting, you know, all those people that are coming at them at the time.
And
so
they're, like, screeching, and they got the torches. Ah!
Well, and knives, apparently, because
poor
gal got his guts come out.
Yeah.
That was awful.
Yeah, poor gal. I liked it. We were saying before.
We all liked Gal a lot.
Yeah, Gal was probably my favorite character in the whole movie, just because he was so fun, you know?
He was very kind too.
Yeah.
He had a like a rough exterior, but like one of those heart of gold, you know, but rough on the edges.
Well, you get the feeling that he's a little bit more professional in that, you know, it's just a job. He's just
mm-hmm.
paid to do what he does, and it doesn't really matter. And he's not going to allow that stuff to sort of emotionally manipulate him. Whereas
right.
Jay's more of a hothead. He's got issues.
I got a vague sense though that Gal might be. Bonk and Jay's wife on the side. Did you get that a little bit?
It seems like they at least had some kind of a more of a relationship.
Yeah. If nothing was going on, there were probably thoughts, at least. Yeah,
right.
That seemed a little tense.
But she didn't scotch tape a note to his penis.
That's true. No, Fiona.
Dear John letter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Which is weird, because now she comes back.
Well,
so,
no, she doesn't come back. She was never interested
yeah, she's
in
been,
Gal.
She's been haunting them the whole time.
Yeah, she was never interested in him as a partner. It was to target their next, you know, sacrificial victim.
And it seems like because the guy knew about whatever happened in Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's working for him, he probably said, these are the people that I want. So go to this guy's jazzer or whatever, boxer-size thing.
Class. Yes.
That he's going to be your in to this guy that we want.
Yeah, because then she goes in and she marks the back of that mirror. Yep.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
So when did the client, because I missed this then, because if this was actually discussed, but when did the client talk to Gal or get in touch with Gal for the, you know, for the hit?
I think that's kind of off screen.
Yeah.
We didn't really see that.
We didn't see any of that.
No, we just saw Gal come to
right and says
Jay,
he's got a job
and the money's
and
good.
Say he's got a
yeah.
job.
But
right, the money's really good. You need to get back on the horse. Here's
yeah, it's
our
been 8 months.
But he hasn't met him yet, because remember they show up And he was like bringing in his gun, and he was like, "Why are you bringing your gun to the meeting?" He's like, "I don't know these people. Do you?"
Yeah, I don't know who's gonna be there.
Right.
We forgot to also mention, I think, that there's like this symbol that the cult has or whatever.
Oh yeah, that's dark. They're
from the very beginning you see it,
and it does look very much like the Blair Witch symbol. A little bit. Or
even a pentagram.
Yeah. So you basically they put the symbol underneath, I guess they mark the house, you know. Yeah. I thought it might be a curse or something that she was putting on the house, but then
it's just a symbol to the other cult members so they know who the ones
are. Marked. These are
Yeah.
Plus, there are things that happen like, you know, the cat kills a bunny, so he eats the bunny because.
But did the cat kill the bunny?
We assume that's what happened.
And I think that's probably what happened. I don't know. I think we're thinking a little too deep.
But then, well, that's just it. You never know. But then
it's all ambiguous.
Then the cat gets murdered. But we're going down a rabbit hole.
Then the cat gets murdered by who? We don't know. They don't know. And it's tied to their front door.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Dude,
that was terrible. Yeah. So the cat that supposedly killed the bunny is now dead, you know, or whatever. And, I mean, it just got me, like, yeah, it was just really weird, like.
Talk about that one scene that you seem to get really tickled on when they're attacking, they're setting up to attack the MP, and they're out in the woods, and Gal catches a couple of rabbits.
Okay, so, yeah, there's some dark humor, for sure, in this movie. And they kill these two rabbits so that because they're camping out overnight in the woods. He's like, "I caught our dinner." And he starts to skin the rabbits, and he makes up this gruesome little song. He's like, "Hey, little bunny, I'm taking off your coat.
It's going to get cold."
What do you think about that? That was pretty delightful.
Delightfully horrible.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I like that. Well, in the little featurette we watched, he talks about, you know, the use of black humor as a way to sort of release the tension, because it can't be up here like that all the time.
You'd get desensitized to it.
You get desensitized, and you can't keep it up. It would be ridiculous.
Well, yeah, it's that, and also, yeah, so if you, yeah, he was also talking about how, like, apparently, and I really like this, is almost like writing 101 in a way of teaching people how to write, but, like, he was saying, like, you know, once you go up, you know, you got to go down a little bit. Then you go back up, because if you stay at the same pace, people aren't going to like what they just saw, and that's going to keep with them. But if something bad happens again, then their mind goes to something else and not to what the terrible thing they just saw. And I was like, I never thought about that. Like, that is a great, like, when you're writing these kind of movies, that's the perfect way to do it. Because
it's just like life, you know, if you grow up in a really terrible environment, you get desensitized to terrible shit happening all the time. You know, like, another neighbor got shot. Well,
the effect is gone.
Yeah, yeah, you don't get as upset about it because you're like, well, that just happens in this neighborhood. Yeah.
And that just happens in this movie. You know, things just keep happening.
So you gotta release the tension and take it down a notch so that the next event you can have a properly human reaction to it. Like, oh my God, that's horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as this being a horror movie, this isn't so much a traditional horror movie. As there's some horrible shit that's happening, and it's a horror story to the characters, because there are all these weird supernatural shit happening to them that they can't explain and can't control. But to us, it's kind of different. Because
it's like a thriller.
Yeah, it's more like a thriller or
it's stressful.
A mashup.
It stresses you out to watch it.
It does.
It's hard to watch.
And I like the fact that the director talks about how if you're going to do this and you're going to use violence as a way to move your narrative along, you can't do it in such a way that it's glamorized or cartoonish. It has to be brutal and realistic in order to you know, keep your narrative going, but also to keep the attention of the people and to not let it veer off into like a cartoon or something else. So it doesn't undermine what's going on. And very effective. All the violence was pretty nasty. I mean, we were all cringing. Even I've seen it several times, and I still was like, oh.
Well, especially like the bone breaking scene and the kneecapping, you know, like all that
stuff.
The
hand slash gets me every time.
Oh, I hate seeing
that. How realistic was that?
I mean, it was really good.
He's running his hand that's been cut, slashed under the sink, and you can see where the flap of skin is coming up and all the blood is coming out of it.
Yeah, it was... Oh, it was hard. I had to close my eyes a couple of times. They did a great job. I really had to.
Yeah, the makeup effects were really good.
And gory stuff doesn't always bother me, but when it's really realistic like that.
That's the thing. I mean, when you looked at this movie, too, like, this movie could have gone in any direction, honestly. They kind of set it up where it could be anything. It could be a home invasion movie. It could have been, you know, whatever. But what they gave us is something completely different than I've ever seen. I've never seen a movie like this where, you know, I've seen movies maybe try to go this way, but this was a really effective way of going from this story of these just normal people, you think, ish. When you first see them.
There are expectations, and then they get subverted.
Then you start realizing they're not as normal as, you know, we would, you know, I don't think your neighbor's a hitman, you know,
Not Betty and Barney Rubble, that's for sure.
But you never know. And that's the scariest thing, true, too, is you don't, I don't know if my neighbors are hitmen. You know, one of them's Russian. I don't know, you know.
Well, and
he could be a Russian hitman.
That's the other thing. That's the other kind of creepy thing behind this film is that it's telling you that there's this world that we don't know about. You know, we assume everyday life, everyday everybody's just a normal person. There's really no normal person in this film.
Mm-mm.
None. Nobody. Everybody has some weird sensitive stuff.
The kid is sort of normal.
The innocent kid. He's like,
innocent kid is probably the one that... The cat's...
No, the cat's not even innocent. He killed that rabbit.
He's not innocent. No. But he's normal. I mean, cats do that.
Everybody else has some kind of weird, shady thing going on, with the exception maybe the poor people in the restaurant who are there singing the Jesus song and, kind of being happy and, you know, and that's why they're making fun of them. It's like, look at these happy assholes.
These happy assholes.
They don't understand that they know.
Another round of orange juice.
Yeah, because they've already experienced the fact that there's more shit going on behind the scenes in life than most people realize.
Right.
You know, but then they don't even understand how much is going on. They don't understand that they're cogs in whatever machine is going on.
No, they just, all they're doing is they're getting paid to do a job, and that's it.
So I'm going to go down a weird rabbit hole, speaking of rabbits, of course.
Mr.
And, you're going to get cold in here. But,
take the coat off.
This, I know, was not intentional at all, but I'm going to go with it because I love it. All right, y'all know about Dark Brandon. Do you know what I mean by? Okay, so there's this I don't know, it's a bunch of memes. You know, you'll see it on social media where sometimes our president, Joe Biden, will give somebody a zinger that just comes out of nowhere, and it's like, you evil son of a bitch. You know, I mean, he just goes for the jugular. Yeah,
he usually is like this, tries to come off as like this nice grandpa kind of
person. Yeah, but every now and then he goes, and so there's these memes going around, they call it Dark Brandon, because you know the whole Let's Go Brandon thing. So he's embraced the Brandon title, but then he'll have like red glowy eyes, Dark Brandon. Dude.
Out of nowhere.
The client in this looks so much like Joe Biden to me. And I'm just like, oh my God, Dark Brandon. Dark Brandon is real!
Well, it's funny you mention that because...
Darth Brandon,
when
there you
I
go.
First saw the film, I wasn't thinking Joe Biden. I was thinking John Hurt. I thought he looked very, very similar to. He had that very same kind of pale complexion, similar face, similar hair, you know? So that was interesting.
The doctor, we see him later.
We do.
And he was he was in a little... he looked like the Emperor from Star Wars.
That's the other reason why I was thinking maybe the wife knew about it, because she sent him to that doctor.
That's true.
And that doctor wasn't there to clean his hand.
No, that doctor was to fuck with his head.
And he's like, where's my regular doctor?
Right.
You know?
Well, you know what? It would have really been a good thing if he had killed the wife or was killing the wife, and then she looked up and goes, thank you. You know, she didn't. She just laughed. But it would have been, that would have gave us the hint that she was in on the whole thing.
Yeah, but
but maybe they
this way it's more ambiguous, but it's possible. Yeah.
Maybe that was why she was laughing.
So you think that there's some kind of prophecy or something that maybe this guy fulfilled by, it's got to be a guy that like kills his own wife and child or something.
There has to be something.
And it brings about like a... something or other, second coming or whatever.
Somebody who does something. It's like...
Because they all applaud him at the end and they put a crown on him after he kills his wife and son. And it's like, I think he just fulfilled some kind of prophecy
for like
them.
Kind of like the Wendigo, you know, it's not the guy who eats people as a cannibal. Yeah. It's the guy who eats the cannibals.
Right.
You know what
I mean?
So it's like that next level up. You know, so I don't know.
All right, what kind of emotion do you think this guy felt at the end? Like the main character, Jay. Because when you looked at his face, I got nothing.
Exactly.
I think it was just stunned. Like, I don't think he had any feeling at that moment. He was just like, wait, what? And then the movie ends.
Right.
Wait,
what?
Yeah.
That's going to be my last words.
I assume they kill him at the end because he's fulfilled his task unwittingly.
Possibly.
Or maybe they just, worst part would be if they just left him alone. Like, it was his wife dead and everything.
Yeah, well, he would probably do himself in at that point. I don't think he'd last very long.
Right. And his son.
Holy
crap. Poor kid.
I know, him doing that and then... And being like already being so traumatized by whatever happened to Kev that we don't keep whatever that, you know.
There's this, you know, other level of like weird mystical, satanic kind of shit where you mix the blood of the innocent with the blood of the guilty, blah, 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 blah. So that could be the wife and the son. That's why I was thinking she was kind of in on it because being one of them, she would be the guilty and the boy would be the innocent.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she starts out.
No.
If she's involved, I don't think she starts out that way, but I think Fiona maybe got to her.
Because the thing is, she seems to really want to kill those people who are in the cottage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because she seems...
She's in full protective mode.
Yeah, so that made me think she's not. But then you kind of planted that seed of doubt in my head. I'm like, but why was Fiona over there all the effing time?
That's the thing. Now you have to go back and think about what it is you saw before. Believe me, this is one of those movies I watch and I learn something new every time I rewatch it. I pick up something. I pick up a thing and I'm like, okay.
I feel like if I watch it again right now, I'd start developing new theories.
Well, because once you see it once, right, that's the beginning of it. Then you see it again, and then you're like, holy shit, that makes sense of why that happened, and that makes sense of why that happened. Then you see it again, and then you're like, holy shit, I don't remember that being in that part, you know, or whatever. Or, you know, like, it's a movie that has multiple viewings, which is the sign of a good movie, is if you want to go back and watch it again because you might have missed something the last time.
Because the way that it's done, and this is the proper way to do a movie... Everything matters. There's no throwaway lines. There's no throwaway scenes. There's no throwaway anything.
Yeah.
Everything that happens, happens for a reason. You may not know exactly what the reason is immediately, but somewhere along the line, it's going to reveal itself, or you're going to think about it, or it's going to be ambiguous enough that it makes you think about it.
Joe and I kept asking Paul, like, does that mean, are we going to understand that? Maybe.
Oh, yeah. It's like, okay, they're going to answer this at some point, right? And Paul's like, there may be answers. There may be answers.
And, of course, that meant no, there wasn't any.
Well, we didn't know that. We thought he was saying, you just quit being impatient and watch. Nope, they didn't.
You
not
meant
come.
That maybe there'll be answers and
like,
maybe there isn't.
I really want to know what happened in Kiev. I want to know so badly.
Maybe the commentary they explain.
Ultimately, it doesn't matter. It's the MacGuffin that sets up his personality flaw.
Good word there, MacGuffin.
Yeah, it's his tragic flaw that crack in him.
So MacGuffin is a Alfred Hitchcock word, and it means. They set something up in the movie that does not matter in the main course of something, but matters to that main person in some way or whatever.
Okay.
So like, you know, yeah, like his setup.
My theory, if you really want to know, I think it was a botched job and he ended up killing a kid or a couple of kids because that kid thing
keeps coming back.
Comes back. And remember, at one point, the one guy, the client says, you know, hopefully we learn from our mistakes.
Right.
Oh, and that was like a real rub.
Hold on a second. Here's another thing that you guys might not have thought about. But the cave or whatever, the stuff that happened to him was 8 years ago. How old is his son?
8 months ago. No, it was eight months ago.
I thought it was 8 months.
No, it was 8 months
ago. I thought it was 8 years.
No, eight months.
Oh, it was 8 months.
Yep.
Oh, okay, well then.
Well, there goes that theory. Oh,
damn
rats.
It, I was going to say, because 8 years, then the
kid
would be
back up out of that rabbit hole.
Oh, well. You know what? Damn.
That bunny's
for some reason,
his coat.
I thought it was like, yeah. But, yeah. All right.
But yeah, but it makes you wonder, and that's kind of how I think it is, because he doesn't really go off the rails until the whole kiddie thing pops in.
Yeah.
You know, and then once that pops in, he's just like full of anger, and it's all starting to come out. So I think, and it would make sense, if you were hired to kill, like, say, a general, and you ended up accidentally killing his kids or family along with it.
Right.
That would fuck you up. At least
probably.
Most people, even a guy who's been paid to kill someone. You weren't paid to kill children. You were paid to kill, you know, because he even talks about, you know, these people deserve to die. They
yeah.
were bad people.
Yeah.
They deserve to suffer. But what if you kill somebody who doesn't?
But then why did he kill the dog?
Probably because the dog was a watchdog and would have attacked him or did attack him. We don't see it.
Yeah.
But I assume
that's
what it
is. Or he might have just been, you know, collateral damage. Might have gotten shot in passing, you know.
It's possible.
He was in such a rage, he didn't.
And somebody killed his cat, you know.
It's true.
But that was later.
Well, that's true. The cat was later.
Yeah. The cat was later.
I think he was just, it was friendly fire.
which was another thing is, okay,
which is
so.
Part of his rage.
Yeah.
So, they didn't. The killing of the cat actually happened before, I believe it happened before they went to that guy and said, can we quit? You know, I think they were thinking of the one guy at Gal was.
No, I think it was after, because remember the guy saying that someone is sending you
a message. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, that message is loud and clear.
Yeah.
Don't quit the assignment.
I don't remember. I swear to God it was before, but okay.
My theory behind that, I think it was Fiona. Because Fiona was at the house.
Oh, she was
Fiona
there all the
knew
time.
About it.
Oh, yeah.
She knew about the cat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I bet she did it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean.
There's some evil shit going on behind Fiona. And it's funny because she doesn't seem like that at all. She's like, comes off as sort of the one person who's like the odd thumb out. All the other ones have military backgrounds. And
mm-hmm.
and
she's HR.
Right. And she's just like, yeah. comes off as like a regular suit. Oh no, there's more going on behind Fiona.
Yep.
Than just boxer size.
Did she say where she worked as an HR or anything?
No.
No. So she works for the cult as HR.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
We gotta fire some people in the cult. Let's,
Well, so after seeing this, I'm definitely going to have to go check out some of his other movies. Like you
do more Ben Wheatley movies.
Well, I
Meg
need to watch...
2 is still playing in the theater.
No, I don't watch Meg 2.
No, I want a Ben Wheatley movie, not a movie that he necessarily had to direct.
Yeah. Well, I was telling Paul before the podcast.
In the Earth is really good. That's probably the next one I want to do for indie film, for Forgotten Art Classics. So. Yeah, that's really good, and it's another movie that you have certain expectations, and they go in different directions, and I like that. That's really cool. So this was your first Ben Wheatley movie. What did you think?
I thought it was interesting. Like, I mean, I don't know how many I could watch of his stuff, you know, because it is pretty brutal, and if it's anything like this, if all the other ones are like this, it's not like. Okay, so some people might know, but I've been kind of not writing horror a lot because, like writing a horror, you know, you have to think of how many people you want to kill, and you have to think about all these, like, dark, disturbing thoughts in your head. And I've been writing a lot more comedy, lighthearted shit, and it's been easier on my, like, psyche right now,
yeah,
you know? And so, like, and sometimes I don't like to watch a lot of, like, I like to watch, like, silly horror or fun, like, goofy.
Chris Seaver.
Chris Seaver, kind of goofy shit. Like, I'd rather watch that than watch something like
Drunk
this.
Drunken Wu-Tang.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a dark movie.
Oh, yeah.
This is, you know, you take a walk in the darkness with this one. It's really well done.
It is, but it's like, it would be something like... I could see it being a problem for a lot of people who are sort of dealing with PTSD in some way or another, too.
Yeah,
this is a triggering film in a number of ways.
That everyone would want to watch this.
I mean, it's, you know, I hate to compare it to Gaspar Noé, but, you know, Same thing with Irreversible. That's a great film, but man, is that a triggering movie, and not for everybody. Not for everybody at all.
That's something that we're going to do on, like, if we do the extreme horror.
Yeah, he's
things.
Another one that I've got a bunch of movies that
so
really good.
The upcoming films that Ben Wheatley has, one is called Freak Shift. I have no idea what that would be about. In development, he's got Untitled Ideal Film.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe that's whatever. Then he's got one that sounds fucking awesome, which is Mega Evil Motherfuckers. And then nice. Another one called Hard Boiled, and I wonder if that's a remake to the John Woo film.
I don't know, but it sounds like he's going in a little more comic direction. Maybe he's the same way. Maybe he's getting rid of all the really dark
maybe
stuff.
Maybe he's got
first.
A purge. Yeah. So it was interesting when I found out that David Lynch is like a Zen Buddhist. And I'm like, you know what? That makes sense, because you couldn't walk around with that shit in your head all the time and not kill people. I mean, he probably has to do that.
Well, one thing we haven't discussed, and I'm wanting to hear what your thoughts are, what did you guys think of the acting?
Oh, fantastic, of course.
Oh, yeah.
It was fantastic.
Everybody was great.
I think Moody's favorite character was Gal, the Irish guy.
He's been in a number of different films, and both he and Jay are guys that have worked with Ben Wheatley in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned before, the one who was playing Shell was someone in The Descent and has been in other films.
Yeah.
And
because the whole time I was like, God, what do I know her from? What do I know her from? I think she was my favorite as far as acting goes. Not necessarily favorite character, but I liked her acting a lot. She was fantastic.
She was really good. They were all
really
good.
I really liked Dark Brandon, too. He was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and it's difficult because you can really veer off into the cartoon or into over the top, but they don't do that.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's very, very realistic. You believe everything that they say and everything they do, and it was just really, really, really well done. And I can't say enough good things about the film. The music, how about the music?
Oh, gosh. Some of the ways they used it, too, was so jarring, because you'd be in a scene where they were contemplating their next move, and it was a full orchestra with really strident. And then all of a sudden, the scene changes, and they're in a car, and it's the next day, and it's sunny out, and there's rainbow. And you're just like, what?
The rainbow bit was awesome.
Okay, like, that's actually a bad example, because when the rainbow was showing, it had all that creepy music going on, so that was kind of a nice little mix of emotions going on there. But yeah, it was crazy how it would just be full-on orchestral chaos, and then suddenly silent.
Another mark of a Ben Wheatley film is he's really, really good use of music.
I wonder who wrote the music for this.
By the way, he directed the remake to Rebecca.
Oh, okay.
Which is, it's on Netflix, so if you ever get Netflix again, you can watch it, but it's,
I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I like the original.
I love it. We did that for Criterion Watch, and I think you hadn't seen it or something? Or
I'd seen
you?
It a long time ago when I was younger.
And so we watched it, and we were like, oh my God, this is so good. Laurence Olivier.
Well,
and
originally, when I saw it, I was disappointed because, well, not really a ghost movie, and I wanted a ghost movie when I was a kid. You know, but it was not until I was an adult that I finally appreciated it for what it was.
When I first watched it, it was actually just last year, and I totally expected that it was a ghost movie, and I was not disappointed, though. I was like, wow, but it's almost as if, I mean, her presence was there, even though there was no ghost there. It was as if there was.
I wanted the ghost.
Aw, well.
Originally.
I do like ghost movies,
so,
but
I'm very curious, given his use of music, given his use of light and shadow, the way he shoots things, I'd be very curious to see what his version of Rebecca would be.
And the star of it is not Laurence Olivier, it is Armie Hammer.
Oh, God, really?
I wonder if he eats anybody in the movie, you know.
That's weird.
Who plays
Lily James is the main star. He played the Joan Fontaine role.
All right, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, Lily James is a great... Oh, and Kristen Scott Thomas is in it. So.
Ooh, I like her.
Yeah, so there's some good actors in the movie. I mean, Armie Hammer is not my favorite actor.
No.
But I'll... you know what? I believe that Ben could direct anybody well.
Yeah, Paul's making kind of a face right now. I wish you could see it. It's like something smells bad all of a sudden in the room.
Yeah, not my favorite either. But like you said, if it's a Ben Whitley
movie, what's he famous for? I know the name, but I don't know actors, modern actors.
He's just an actor. He's like, he hasn't really been in. I think he was in.
More famous for being famous.
Oh. He was in the movie Munich or something, if I'm correct. Something like that. I'm looking him up right now. So
I don't watch a ton of
Hollywood?
Modern Hollywood movies. Yeah, I just don't know a lot of it.
What I mean, do you think that Matt would like this?
I don't know. I feel like the beginning, he would be kind of like moody. You know, like it's too slow at the beginning. But I think the setup that they give is worth it. I think it pays it off.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get through that part, oh yeah.
Because he really liked the nunsploitation movie.
That he did, yeah. He did like that one. But I think he
Dark
would like...
Dark Water.
I think he would like this if he can get through the first 20
minutes. And I think
minutes.
He would like the music. Because remember, the music really stood out on that
to him.
Film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's a big music guy. The way that I am with finding things in the background, Matt is like that when it comes to music. It really is a big deal to him. And if a bad musical score can ruin a movie for him if it's like stupid or just poorly done. So,
you know, that's honestly why I can't get into The Princess Bride, because everyone loves that movie so much, but oh God, it's just so awful. I guess it's part of the charm, I guess it's supposed to be, but I can't get over how awful it is.
Oh. How awful the movie is?
No, the music. Mm. Oh, all the stupid little Moog synthesizer crap. Oh, my God.
It's not its strong point.
Oh,
it's not what I remember
from
the movie.
It just makes me want to jump out of the window. The story is all cute and everything, and the acting's great, but, oh, that music just ruins it for me. I can't.
The only thing I can think of in the music is there's this one scene where they're, like, announcing the prince or whatever, you know, Prince Humperdinck, you know. And they're like, do, 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 you know, the horn. So I don't know. I like that movie.
I don't know. Just look at it on you. And I like the movie, too. It's just, but the music just.
Well, the music was very effective in
this
movie.
Oh, absolutely.
One last thing I did want to talk a little bit about was the editing. There's some very interesting editing choices that are made. Sometimes you're kind of jumping from one scene to another. Even within scenes, and you know, it's kind of jarring at first. It's kind of even, I almost want to say, annoying at first. But because it's consistent, it doesn't bother me in the end, and it doesn't disturb the flow of the narrative.
So when I see that, yeah. So when I saw that, I literally thought, this is a dream. Then, you know, because that's generally what you do when it's like not real. You know, none of this stuff is real. You jump from whatever and stuff. So the fact that this wasn't set up where it was real and everything makes it even weirder that they would use those cuts and maybe try to fool audiences.
Right. It's if you're going to make a psychological thriller, which I think is part of the makeup of this film, that's what you do. It's a way to subvert reality so that the audience is not quite 100% certain what they're looking at or what's going on. They have no firm earth to stand on, and that's one of the hallmarks of a great psychological horror or horror movie in general, because it's like that dream and you can't wake up.
It kind of gives you like emotional whiplash.
It does.
It was like that scene I was already talking about where they're standing in the hotel room and they're contemplating their hit list basically, and the music is just really intense, and then cuts straight to them. They're sitting in the car, staking out the place the next day, and it's silent. And you're just like, how am I supposed to feel right now?
At the beginning, where they've had the scene after scene of them fighting and yelling and screaming, and then, poof, they cut back and they're making up, and they're very, very loving and very physical, and you know, and it's like, oh, you can tell what that's saying is, you know, whatever emotion they had, it was a flash in the pan, but it's over with.
Yeah,
and now they're back to the way things were would throw them together in the first place, you know, and that's, you know, a lot of relationships are like that.
So,
I mean, I love the relationship stuff. I loved them together. Male and female lead, you know, like they were just great. But then you also get the exact opposite with, Gal and his girl that I guess for some reason, he kept falling in love with her or whatever.
She didn't seem to have a personality to me, though.
Demon in the sack.
She had a very carefully crafted mask, you know. Mm-hmm. She did not reveal
anything. And that's another movie this kind of reminded me a little bit of, is the last Stanley Kubrick movie, the Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, yeah.
There's a little bit of Eyes Wide Shut in there with mm-hmm. the masking and unmasking and yeah. people presenting themselves in certain ways, but they're not.
Yeah.
You know, and then yeah. the doctor being somebody creepy and,
mm-hmm.
yeah, the high society people are the ones who are into all this shit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. This cult came straight out of the MP's mansion. Yes, mm-hmm. it did.
Well, that also makes me wonder because, like, I've seen movies like, I don't know if you guys saw the movie Satanic Panic.
I haven't watched it yet. I have it.
But there's a little bit of, like, that's like all the rich people, you know, in the rich neighborhood, and they're the satanic people. Yeah. And I'm like thinking, are more satanic people rich? I mean, like,
how did they think they got rich?
I know. Yeah, I wonder
they sold
if
their
that,
souls and
I
got
know.
The money.
Society. We haven't done society yet.
Oh God, yeah. We're supposed to do that for What the Fuck Friday at some point.
Nice.
You know? We were talking about doing that. It's just like we can do something else instead.
Well,
one
thing you can't forget is that when you get very, very rich, you get bored because mm-hmm. you have everything you could ever want. You don't have to struggle for anything.
Mm.
It makes sense that more of them would be in a cult. I mean, there are a lot of rich Scientologists out there.
Have you seen Society?
No.
Oh, we got to show that to you. That is a creepy-ass weird movie.
That's weird as fuck.
I love those kinds of things. I love those.
Yeah.
The weirder and the darker, the better.
There you go.
Yep, there you go.
Perfect person to come on Forgotten Horror Classics.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved having when Lenore was here, but Lenore was more like a fresh flower. She hadn't seen this stuff before. And I kind of felt bad a few times because she was like, this movie really scared me. And I was like, oh, I felt kind of bad.
I mean, this movie wasn't scary as in
disturbing.
Like it was disturbing. It was weird. And it just made you unsettling, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't scary
it's
in the sense of
journey.
Like
I will admit I was scared during the hammer scene though. I could not watch all that. I had to turn my
I was
head.
More afraid in the
Moody was like this.
Ooh,
I know.
He had his hands over his
head. I just felt like gore and shit.
I was more afraid for the characters that I have now been invested in.
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean? For them.
Yeah, the tunnel scene was probably the scariest.
That was harrowing. That was so
well. You just didn't know what was gonna happen.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Trapped in a tunnel with a bunch of screaming cult members.
Screeching.
Half of them naked with torches.
And
led
knives.
By Dark Brandon.
Well, anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed it. And I hope people go out and give this a chance. Like I said, it's an IFC Midnight production. So if you get, you know, Infinite Film Channel, if it's still out there. But I guess maybe that shows up there. I don't know that this is on Netflix, but I know you can still go out and buy the DVD, so definitely go out and get it. It's got, you know, some nice special features. It's got commentary from some of the actors, from the director.
And the director, yeah.
Yeah, it's got interviews.
Like two commentary tracks.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Featurette. Mm-hmm. It's got all kinds of stuff. And this is a movie that it's going to make you think. You're going to want to watch it probably a couple of times for it to sink in.
But are they going to want to watch it now that they've heard everything? That
hopefully.
Spoiled the whole fucking movie.
There you go. But, you know, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to see it.
Yeah, it's
all
one
together.
Thing to hear about it.
You definitely want to watch it because it's just really, really well done.
Maybe we should go back and edit this and put a tag at the beginning. Hey, major spoiler, so just go watch it. Just trust us. Go watch it and then come back and listen to us.
Anyone who's been following the show knows we spoil the hell out of it.
And we spoil the hell out of all our shows. But
it's the way it is.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you both very, very much, and thanks everybody for listening to the show, and hopefully you guys will come back for the next episode of Forgotten Horror Classics, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. And, okay. Sorry?
How long was the podcast?
Hour and 3 minutes.
Oh, nice. Hey. Nice.